The National Broadcasting Company presents News Here and Abroad. William Hillman, well-known European correspondent, will discuss latest developments in the foreign field, while Raymond Clapper, noted political writer and Scripps Howard columnist, will observe events on the national scene. Tonight we hear first, Raymond Clapper.
The temper of Washington is rapidly hardening in face of a two-ocean crisis. The warlike trend in Japan and the torpedoing of the American destroyer Kearney southwest of Iceland, and I say southwest, that is on our side of Iceland, have challenged the United States. As a people, we are reluctant to go out looking for trouble, but when trouble begins coming at us, our instinct is to stand up to it. That instinct is asserting itself in Washington now. There is no thought of turning back. The only question being considered is how to move most effectively. The Navy is taking countermeasures in the North Atlantic as a result of the torpedoing of the Kearney. Senator Pepper of Florida, who is improving on the old biblical rule of an eye for an eye, said the answer to the attack on the Kearney ought to be two ships for one. In the Pacific, the Navy ordered merchant ships into port as a safety measure, while waiting to see what Tokyo's new pro-Axis government intends to do. The House, with crowded galleries cheering, voted nearly 2-1 in favor of arming American merchant ships this afternoon. Senate leaders said they would put the measure through by an equal margin. The Japanese crisis already had aroused Congress, and today's news of the torpedoing of the Kearney increased the excitement. Some administration leaders said complete repeal of the Neutrality Act is becoming more probable as a result of these developments. It is possible that an attempt to send American ships into combat zones may be made in the Senate when the armed ship bill is considered, although such a move would likely lead to prolonged debate from the isolationist bloc. Administration leaders in Congress capitalized upon the Kearney incident and insisted that it was evidence of Germany's policy of attacking the United States. Some of them suggested that the Japanese crisis was inspired and even forced by Germany to throw us into a more difficult position and to force us to withdraw from some of our protection from the Atlantic. However, none of this had any great effect upon the Republicans in the House so far as the vote on the arming of American merchant ships indicated. 39 Republicans voted for arming the ships, while 113 voted against it. Thus, two-thirds of the Republicans opposed arming the ships. The Democrats were almost solid for the measure. 219 Democrats voted for the bill and only 21 against it. In spite of the heavy Republican opposition, the total vote of 2-1 was thoroughly satisfactory to the administration, which was anxious, especially because of the effect abroad, to pile up a clearly decisive vote. The attitude of the Republicans toward this crisis tends further to place the minority party in a role of fundamental opposition to the administration on foreign policy, even to the extent of refusing to approve arming of merchant ships, which are subject to attack now, as recent incidents have shown. It was apparent that the Republican leader of the House, Representative Joe Martin, who also is chairman of the Republican National Committee, had made no effort to rally his forces in support of the administration. In view of the excitement among many members over the critical situation, Representative Martin today issued an appeal for calmness. He said it was well to keep cool heads and to proceed only after mature deliberation. And out in Kansas, Alf M. Landon, the Republican presidential candidate in 1936, made a speech tonight, severely denouncing the administration. He said that under a smokescreen of national defense, President Roosevelt and a little group of New Dealers were attempting to establish a collective state. It looks as if the Congress and the government will have to go ahead without the leadership of the Republican Party in this crisis. That is to be regretted because we now face a situation so grave that the two major parties need to stand together for the defense of the nation's interests. But if the Republican leaders cannot see that the interests of the United States are being challenged from abroad, if all that they can see in it is a political issue against President Roosevelt, then the government will have to go ahead anyway. It will have to do what seems to it to be required to protect the nation's interests, even though the Republican leadership chooses to snipe and scuttle and refuses to give the government, which certainly has a heavy responsibility at this time, the benefit of the doubt. The Navy was on the alert in the Pacific tonight. Some American merchant ships were ordered into port today for further instructions. but the Navy announced that these vessels will continue to ply their trade, thus giving plain notice that the Navy does not intend that the work of the American Merchant Marine, which is hauling essential raw materials and war supplies back and forth across the Pacific, shall be interfered with. The Navy also announced significantly that exceptional progress was being made in building Pacific Island and Alaskan bases. This announcement gave assurance that the bases program was well apace of the general expansion program of the Navy into the greatest naval power the world has ever seen. We have never sought trouble in the Pacific. In fact, the administration has been under fire by many groups in this country because of its patient effort to keep peace with Japan. It has been accused of appeasement. The government has not had an appeasement policy in the sense that it was willing to sanction aggression by Japan, but it has sought to avoid war if that could be done without sacrificing everything for which the United States stands. We have opposed conquest of China by sheer military force. We have opposed any moves that would mean annexation by Japan of the East Indies, which contain raw materials essential to us. That we had no imperialistic designs in the Far East is clear from the fact that a few years ago we voted to give the Philippine Islands their independence in 1946, and that action still stands to this day. When Japan talks about only wanting a Monroe Doctrine in the Far East, she is using a good label to cover something quite different. The Monroe Doctrine has not meant conquest of Latin America by the United States. It has not meant trade control. We have had a hard battle, in fact, for markets in Latin America. The Monroe Doctrine means protection for Latin American countries to work out their destiny, free of interference or domination by European countries. It does not mean conquest of Mexico or of Argentina. Japan is using the term to cloak a most ruthless program of armed conquest, which is something quite different from the policy which we have followed under the name of the Monroe Doctrine. And now here is Bill Hillman with comments on the news abroad.
Lieutenant General Tojo, strongman of the Japanese Army, has completed the formation of a new government. The new Japanese Prime Minister will present the roster of his cabinet to the Emperor Saturday morning. The new government will take office Saturday afternoon. This new government is literally freighted with destiny. This is more than a literary expression. The course of action and policy of the Japanese government, created at a critical moment in the relations of the United States and Japan, and the approaching climax in the war between Germany and Russia, will be followed with increasing tension and anxiety throughout the world. The new government will include Shigenori Togo, former ambassador to Russia and Germany, as foreign minister and as overseas minister. This is a significant selection. Togo was ambassador to Germany in 1937 and ambassador to Russia from October 1938 to September 1940. General Toyo will retain the office of war minister as well as prime minister. The other important posts, the Navy and Home Ministries, will be occupied by Admiral Shimada, until recently commander of the Japanese fleet in Chinese water, and Michio Yusawa, formerly Vice Minister for Home Affairs. The first problem to face the new Japanese government is the problem of Russia. The problem of Russia is inextricably tied up with the Japanese-American relations. The focal point and perhaps the first question to face the cabinet will be Vladivostok. Look at a map. Note that to reach Vladivostok, you have to pass through Japanese waters. When the United States decided to send aid to Russia, Vladivostok became one of the principal points of transmission. Several ships carrying oil have already been routed to and arrived at Vladivostok. More ships were on the way and more were planned to be sent, not only with oil but with other material for the hard-pressed Russian armies. When the first ship carrying gasoline to Russia started on its way, a crisis developed between the United States and Japan. Militarists in Japan declared the shipment of oil through Japanese waters almost a few days after the United States had put a ban on an oil shipment to Japan was an insult and a threat to the Japanese Empire. Hotheads were for intercepting and stopping the shipment. Prince Konoye, as premier at the time, cautioned against any such action. Konoye was hopeful of negotiating some understanding with the United States. The militarists stayed their hands for the time being while Konoye opened negotiations with Washington. Nothing came of these negotiations. The main reasons for failure were, first, the United States' insistence that Japan quit the Axis and cease making any further aggressive movements in the Far East. And second, Japan's insistence that the United States recognize Japan's principal gains in China and get China to agree to a compromise peace. As time went on, and there seemed little hope of agreement, the militarists in Japan became restive. The militarists were waiting at any rate for the Germans to gain some outstanding success in Russia. Then came the Nazi drive and the threat of the fall of Moscow. As the Russian situation became critical, and efforts by the United States and Great Britain were made to organize the shipment of aid to the Russian armies, Hitler began to pressure Tokyo. One of the principal demands of Hitler from Japan was the stoppage of the flow of supplies to Russia at the Japanese end. Hitler said, according to informed diplomatic sources, that he would take care of the other two routes by which Britain and the United States would have to ship their supplies. These other two routes are via Archangel and via the Red Sea, Iran, and the Caspian Sea. Hitler said he could block any materials coming from Archangel with the capture or bypassing of Moscow and other northern points. And with the Germans pressing through the Ukraine and across the Sea of Azov, the German Führer indicated German troops would eventually cut off or be in a position to bomb the transport of materials across the south. Thus, the crisis in Japan arose over Germany's insistence that Japan must now show active partnership in the Rome-Tokyo-Berlin axis. This suited the militarists. They saw in Russia's collapse in the West an opportunity in the East. Japan has coveted the Russian maritime provinces in Siberia as well as Vladivostok for a long time. There is no doubt that Germany pointed out to Japan that Britain and the United States might hesitate to plunge into war over Japanese action in Siberia or Vladivostok if they thought it would weaken the defenses in the Atlantic. At a given moment, the Nazis indicated they would see that there would be more action in the Atlantic. The torpedoing of the American destroyer Kearny is undoubtedly part of the general scheme of the Axis powers to put Britain and the United States in a dilemma. For if the United States and Great Britain are plunged into war in the Far East, the Atlantic defenses might suffer. And there is some painful wrestling in British circles over whether the risk of war should be taken in the Pacific if only Russia is attacked. But then comes the embarrassing question. If Great Britain and the United States do not take some concrete action to keep open the route through Vladivostok to Russia, the Russians might very well say, is this war one of partnership only on one front? The Japanese militarists and the Axis powers know the dilemma facing Great Britain and the United States. It is believed, therefore, that the new Japanese government, more inclined to action with the Axis and to hit at Russia at the appropriate moment, may move diplomatically at first. That diplomatic move may be a drastic one involving Vladivostok. Japan may advise the United States that the shipment of materials via Vladivostok is detrimental to Japanese prestige, interests, and strategic position.
You have heard News Here and Abroad with Raymond Clapper and William Hillman. Mr. Clapper covered events at home, and Mr. Hillman reported on developments on the international scene. News Here and Abroad will next be heard Monday at the same time over many of these stations. This is the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company.